Look, there certainly are benefits for acting faster and harder on climate change, and that's something we're always very clear to communicate, that this is important for the planet and for a secure and safe future. But if we tackle the problems of climate change, then we're going to be building more resilient communities, we're going to be ensuring future prosperity, and we're going to be creating a more equal world for everyone, where people's rights are protected and everyone benefits. So I think it's common to hear those important messages from the likes of Mr. Stern, but I think, you know, it's important to, I think, keep driving home the urgency of what's at stake as well, and the amount that has to be achieved beginning this week to actually close the gap between where we're at the moment and the scale of action that's necessary to avoid a future of far more devastating climate impacts, particularly for very vulnerable communities on Pacific Islands and elsewhere.
Bearing in mind the sheer scale of this gathering in Marrakesh, I mean, there must be a very real danger, as there always is on these occasions, and I think we've seen it in the past with other climate change meetings. They turn into a great big talking shop, and in the end, not much emerges. Paris, of course, was different. I mean, can we continue with that kind of momentum in Marrakesh? Is the sense of urgency apparent?
Look, it can certainly be a glacially slow and frustrating process. There's no doubt about that. It's a very complex negotiation. But Paris was a very big political moment that, you know, got us a solid agreement, and one that Pacific Island countries fought very hard and very skillfully for. This COP, as it's called, Conference of the Parties to the Convention on Climate Change, is really about turning that into action and ensuring it's implemented fairly. We have to agree various rules for its implementation, need to make progress across these critical areas, some of which you mentioned, ensuring there's adequate funding for vulnerable communities to adapt, ensuring there's provisions for addressing irreversible loss and damage from climate change. There's a lot of real-world momentum that's going to help push these negotiations. We've seen new commitments since Paris. We've seen, as I think you mentioned, most of the world's major emitters and developed economies ratify the agreement. It's entered into force in record time. Australia's not among them, unfortunately. They should ratify this year. So there's lots of positive momentum there, but I think we can't overstate the need to be maintaining that and to be recognizing just how quickly we need to be acting on the agreement and working towards realizing its goals.
Of course, as you and the other delegates made your journey to Marrakesh, it was in the knowledge that at some stage this week, unless it's very, very close, we will know who the next president of the United States is going to be. And surely, whether it's a win for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, that's going to have a huge impact, isn't it, on the ultimate outcome of these talks and the whole question of tackling climate change?
Look, everyone will obviously be watching very closely what happens on Tuesday or I think Wednesday, our time here. There's obviously reasons to be concerned there, but I think we do have to be clear that the world at large is getting on with the job and will continue to do so. And we see determined, ever more ambitious action from China, from India, from the big developed countries, very obviously from Pacific Island countries, as we've talked about before. That's going to continue, and, you know, the U.S. will be drawn along with that momentum, whether it likes it or not, and it's in the U.S.'s self-interest economically in terms of its own, you know, security and prosperity to be acting on climate change. So, you know, I think there'll be a lot of nervous people watching what goes on, but also just determined to crack on with the job, whatever the outcome of the U.S. election is.
Would it be fair to say that not everyone who is gathered in Marrakesh is sold on the idea of climate change? There will still be the deniers. But coming back to the point that Nicholas Stern has made, he talks about investing in sustainable infrastructure key to tackling what he says are three central challenges. One is reducing climate risk, but the other two, reigniting growth and delivering on sustainable development goals, would seem to be eminently sensible whether you're a climate change denier or not.
Look, I think eminently sensible is the right words to use. It is in everyone's interest economically in terms of the social outcomes we're pursuing as well to be acting on climate change. Look, I think there are very few real dissenting voices who are still in denial about the reality of the challenge. I mean, they're there, but they're increasingly few, although can be very vocal. Increasingly, the debates are about how do we best tackle this. And they're sure, you know, you see a range of different opinions and priorities reflecting different countries and circumstances. The voice of our region of Pacific Islands remains crucially important in driving home what's at stake and how we can all embrace smart climate solutions and be building a better future for all. And that will continue here in Marrakesh, having not only that strong moral leadership from the region, but, you know, some very skillful diplomacy and real action on the ground that's showing a lot of other countries how things need to be done.
We talked previously to you on the program about what finance may be available for the small island states of the Pacific as they look to mitigate against the predicted effects of climate change. Is there any suggestion that that sum of money is rising?
Well, that's one of the key strands of the negotiation here is international climate finance, and that, as we've discussed before, key part of the global response to climate change. Oxfam's had another very close look at the global picture going into this conference, where it's clear that the level of finance, particularly for adapting to the impacts of climate change, so we're not just talking about building renewable energy futures, we're talking about dealing with the impacts that are happening now and likely to happen in the future. There's still a significant shortfall as compared to the level of need and the amount that vulnerable countries are entitled to. In the Pacific, the issue is not only the amount of available finance, but also the difficulty in accessing funds and having those flow to communities who need them most. And earlier this year, Oxfam made over 50 recommendations for working to improve the scale and accessibility of climate finance in the region. So there will be a lot of debate about this in Marrakesh, and there are crucial decisions that need to be made. We need a clear goal for scaling up the volume of adaptation finance globally. We need to also be reaffirming commitments for developed and developing countries to be working together to make sure that money is flowing in line with national and local circumstances and putting first and foremost the priorities of affected communities.
And a word on Australia, any indication that they are poised to ratify, because they haven't done yet?
They haven't done yet, and they're behind most of the world's big economies and major emitters. I understand they will this year, almost certainly may end up doing it during the course of the negotiations here. Obviously, the sooner we get on and do that, the better. But the bigger issue beyond just the ratification is scaling up action within Australia so it's actually in line with the goals of the agreement, with keeping warming to 1.5 degrees, as we've committed to in the Paris Agreement or working towards that. That means a far greater pace in transforming our energy system, keeping fossil fuels in the ground, building a clean energy future. So ratification is important. It's important we're a constructive player here in all the negotiations, all the technical aspects, all the different areas. But fundamentally, we need to start getting our own house in order faster as well. So that's a message we're sending very clearly to the government. We have to have a concrete plan for getting to zero carbon pollution as soon as possible and to be doing our part in those global efforts.